Coming up, it's another episode of Breakfast with the Beats from the Pitcherless Podcast Network. First, Mike and I each discuss a trade that we made and or didn't make in our fantasy leagues before the deadline. Then, in our beat writer roundup, we discuss George Lombard Jr.'s success, Foster Griffin's future, and Francisco Lindor's claim that the Mets are a winning team. Then it's back to basics, as Mike and I discuss injury and closer situations to monitor over the final 6 weeks of the season. Finally, in our mental health moment, we go over the challenges of maintaining physical fitness goals while working, all in this jam-packed episode. But first, a quick word.
Good morning, my fantasy baseball friends and family. It's your old pal Mike Carter here back with you for episode 19 somehow of Breakfast with the Beats. Joining me, as always, is my good friend, compatriot, comrade in arms, Dave Funnel. Dave on the other side of the national line here in Canada, and I'm here in the funky Midwest. Just wanted to let you all know, for those of you who are listening, I thought I'd share with you a microcosm of my last 12 hours of life and see if you find this to be humorous. Dave's already laughing because he knows what happened to me. So last night, my son got sick at a corn boil. We have our town, Batavia, that we live in, does a corn boil every year, a fundraiser for sports and different events around the school at the beginning of the school year. And he has really significant dairy and peanut allergies, shellfish, a bunch of different things. He accidentally got an ear of corn that had been stuck in real butter, and he became violently ill. So I had to go pick him up while I was in the middle of cutting the grass. Now, for those of you who don't know me, I'm 5'10 and about 235 pounds. And yesterday was an 85 degree day with 100% humidity. So you can imagine what I looked like going to pick my son up at the high school, completely covered in sweat, pick him up, bring him home. Then my night got more interesting because about 12:45 this morning, the fire alarm went off at school. And so I had to run back to my office. I'm in my office right now, following day here, recording the show with Dave. The fire alarm went off. There was a fault in the system somewhere. So I'm walking through here, bleary-eyed, in the middle of the night, in shorts and a sweatshirt, a baseball hat, of course, leading the firefighters around. They're all wide awake, and I look like I'm the last rose of summer, as my mother would say. And then this morning, you ever see those memes where they have the idea of, show me you have teenagers without saying a word? Well, I should have taken a picture of the syrup container because I made myself a couple of waffles this morning, and the syrup container is covered on the outside with just as much syrup on the outside as there is on the inside. So that's pretty gross. I eat my waffles, get ready to come and record the show with Dave. What do? Taking out the garbage, walk into the world's biggest cobweb that I never even saw, covered in from head to, torso in cobwebs, go to swing the cobwebs away from my face. But I've got a syrup hand now, and so my syrup hand catches the web. It becomes a disaster. I'm 15 minutes late for the recording. Thankfully, Dave has the patience of a saint. I know that my day is only going to get better from here because we're talking about baseball, and I'm with my good friend Dave, and we're going to bring you a really packed show today. Dave, good morning. Are you coffeeing up?
I've got my coffee. I've already had my breakfast, and I agree. You get like syrup all over it's disgusting. And it always happens on every single bottle, no matter what.
Yeah.
It's on your hands. And even after you wash them, you still smell it. It's just, it's disgusting.
Yeah. And I'm leaving and I'm muttering to myself because it's not like I have a 5-year-old. I have a 19-year-old and a 16-year-old. Come on, guys. We can do better than this. Let's go. However, soon it will be quiet because school has started again this past week here in Batavia, and Jack went back to school on Wednesday. I went back to school on Wednesday. Katie went back to school on Wednesday, and we bring Ellie back to University of Illinois next weekend. So we're going to get back into some semblance of normalcy here soon. Obviously, it's summer was fun. It was a great time being able to spend time with family, but I'm ready to be back on my schedule. So, Dave, intro to the show here, episode 19. Great question that you asked this week that really got us thinking about the moves that we make and the moves that we don't. What's one trade that you made or didn't make that you regret or are happy about?
Okay, so Two trades. And tip for full context, in my leagues this year, there were hardly any trades either.
Same here.
Or
same here. Very few trades.
It was very tight, like a very tight-lipped league that I'm in. Actually, two leagues. And it's just not a lot going on. But what I was able to do that I'm really happy that I did, right when I lost Jose Ramirez a while back, I was able to trade for Isaac Paredes. And he's filled in pretty well for me. And I gave up Aiden Miller, a prospect who's injured and might honestly need some surgery. But the other owner made this because he's rebuilding and he couldn't drop Paredes. So he had to get something for him. Now, a trade that I didn't make that I'm not sure if I regret just yet. I know you and I were talking about it. I could have given up Wilson Contreras for Chris Sale. I need pitching in this league. And I said no to that. Simply because the way that the contracts are, that Chris Sale was expiring this year. And despite the fact that I could retain him for some weird context that you know all about this league.
Right.
I still opted to keep Wilson Contreras simply because Chris Sale, he's older. He pitches every fifth or sixth day. And I really like what Wilson Contreras has done. But I do regret, because I do need pitching, that maybe I could have actually budged on that, because I do have Pete Alonso and I do have Jonathan Aranda in that league for, you know, first base and corner. But I found myself to be very stuck in my ways this year. And maybe that's possibly why there weren't a lot of trades for me, was that, and I think it's a trap that I fall in, and I know others do. You just really love your roster more than you probably should. And I really like Wilson Contreras in Boston. And if I really like someone and I'm not sure about a trade, I'll find the faults in the other side. Whereas Chris Sale,
that's a very you thing for sure. You do that fairly often when you work through those ideas in your mind.
Yeah, it's just Chris Sale's great. He's been great all year. And sure, he could get injured, but so could Contreras.
Right.
And he did, actually. But I just fall in love with my own roster and I believe too much that, you know, this is going to happen, that's going to happen. And I think for next year, I'm going to try and ease up on that.
It's a good lesson to learn. And I think that you're not wrong for not making that trade. I mean, there are enough red flags when it comes to a guy like Sale with his checkered injury history and being age 37. And it's important to recognize too, last year, you know, he only threw 125 innings last year and he's up to 129 already this year. Now he's not shown too many signs of being faulty in the second half. I mean, 43 strikeouts and 31 innings since the All-Star break and only three walks. So I think you have a really interesting player there in that, you know, you wonder when the other shoe might drop, and it hasn't yet. So I don't have anything wrong with keeping Contreras like you did. Contreras has been terrific this year. On my end, I had a mixed bag trade that I made in May, a sort of a knee-jerk reaction in a weekly points league where I wasn't getting any production out of my second base situation, which at the time was Matt McClain and Bryson Stott. If you remember, Bryson Stott got off to a really, really rough start in that league. I also had Caleb Durbin playing third base, and that was a really, really rough start as well. I traded Drew Rasmussen, which I sort of regret now, for Ketel Marte. It was a good trade for both teams. He needed pitching. I needed infield help. And at the time, I had what I thought was an embarrassment of riches on the pitching side. However, since then, these are my starting pitchers that I have on the IL. You ready? Drum roll. Nathan Eovaldi, Max Meyer, Tyler Glasnow, Shane McClanahan, Devin Williams, Egads, not good. I could really use Rasmussen now. What I'm hoping in that league, it's a weekly points league, and I'm going to make the playoffs. And so I'm not going to make any rash moves. You might remember last week you and I were talking about whether or not I should try to add a waiver wire pitcher to make, we got nine starts a week in that league, and I did not, and I barely hung on and won that week by like 6 points. I'm going to do the same thing this week. I'm only going to have seven guys making starts, but I'm not willing to touch my pitching roster that I have right now. I'm hoping that by the time the playoffs roll around in 3 weeks that I'll have enough healthy pitching to make a run for the title there. So we'll see how that goes. The one that I'm glad that I didn't make, Dave, was the one, if you recall, I was in Tout Wars. I was dangling Otto Lopez trying to get a good pitcher, and I was offered Nady Eovaldi. And Nady Eovaldi is like my kryptonite. I love that guy. And we went back and forth, and I ran that past you. I ran it past Torres as well. We kind of were having our group chat about that trade, and you guys both convinced me not to make it. Now I look really smart for not making that, because Eovaldi's got elbow issues, even though it's not a UCL issue, and his return date is TBD, and he's older. So I'm glad that I did not make that trade, despite my bloodlust for pitching always.
You know what? I like what you did for both things, to be honest, because it's a so for the first trade, because it's a points league and it's not categories, right? Just total points for the week.
Total points.
So, I mean, if you're not going to get the points from Rasmussen, you get the points from Marte. If it was categories, I'd knock you down a bit. But I think you got an elite second baseman for a borderline elite starting pitcher, and you could always stream some pitching here and there. So I like what you did there.
I was worried with Rasmussen that he would be in that situation like he was last year, where he had, you know, he'd go four or five innings and then they'd sit him, you know. And I thought, well, he's not going to really help me too much if he's not getting volume for pitching.
And he could. Who knows? You never know what the Rays are going to do. They could just out of the blue just call someone up, and Rasmussen needs 15 days for, you know, a phantom injury or something.
Fair point.
Yeah. As for the other one, I'm glad you didn't make that deal, because Eovaldi is my kryptonite as well, but in the other way. It's when I see him, I always think of the worst, and I love Otto Lopez, so I think you did pretty well there.
So next year, Dave, what you're telling me is we have to co-manage a team.
Yeah.
That would be a really interesting – we'd have to clear out a lot of time to be able to do that, I think. Oh, that's funny. All right, Dave, let's shift into our beat writer roundup. And you found some great articles this week. And this first one, I think it was really a fun one. George Lombard Jr. has really come on for the Yankees in terms of what he's bringing to the table and how he goes about his business on a daily basis. I'm not sure how to read him yet. What are your thoughts? I know you found an article this week by David Adler talking about Lombard and what he's brought to the Yankees. First of all, kind of give us a summary of that article and, like, let us know what your thoughts are on him so far.
Yeah, so the article is called Three Plays That Show Lombard's All-Around Impact for the Yanks. And it goes into detail just about how he's the fastest Yankees player, and he's also one of the fastest in baseball. It talks about how defensively he is making huge plays. And even in the article itself, you can see there's a few highlights that you could click on. And it goes through the three facets of his game. First, with his batting, talking about the home run, about how fast it goes off the bat and how he's making excellent contact, hitting line drives and hard fly balls. He's doing a tremendous job at the plate. A hard hit rate, the launch angle speed, it's great. Everything from top to bottom is fantastic. And it's what they need, because their offense has been in quite a funk as of late.
Yes, it has.
Then it talks about his base running and how he's a spark. He's, like we talked about, really, really fast. His average sprint speed is top tier in all of baseball. And it talks about how he can beat out infield singles and things like that. He's doing all of the little things. And then finally, it talks about his fielding, about how great he is with his arm, how he has good instincts, and he's able to get to balls that other people can't. And by other people, I'm talking about Anthony Volpe, someone that the Yankees had been relying on for quite a long time and have been struggling. I don't know if this can continue at this rate, but I think he's good enough, and he was an excellent prospect in the sense that he had that promising potential. I think he's obviously, I think, better than Anthony Volpe. And I think what we saw this week with Volpe in AAA is really eye-opening as to the type of player that they were rostering. I don't know if you saw with the challenges that Volpe burned through in the first inning of a AAA game.
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
The laughing on his face, looking like he didn't have a care in the world. And here you just see a guy stepping up to the plate, putting himself into it. And you can just see in his body language that he's out there giving it his all. He's got his eyes are laser focused on everything. So whether or not he can continue at this elite rate for fantasy, I think he's going to remain as the team shortstop. And for volume alone, I think he's someone that you need to roster.
I did roster him in a couple of places where I was able to get him, where I had some really good fab left still. I think on this team, he doesn't really even need to hit all that well as long as he's providing them stellar defense, right? I mean, they have some people hopefully coming back at some point, Judge and Stanton kind of leading that charge coming back. They really need to have a good glove there. And Volpe really had looked like he had taken a further step back this year, just in the times that I had seen him. I agree with your assessment of Lombard. I got to see him play. Now, granted, it's one game, one small sample size. But, boy, the defense is there. The speed is there. The ability to get the balls is there. And to be really honest, I did reach out to my good friend, number one Yankees fan besides Torres, Dave Fitzgerald, and I told him not to say it this week because I know it's coming. I told him not to say it. I go, don't.
Say that again.
I said, don't say what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking. And what he was saying was, I'm not going to say it yet. And I go, don't say it at all. And I'm waiting for him to say, he said about an hour later. Do we have another Derek Jeter?
I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, for God's sake, David. Come on, David. You're better than that. But Lombard is a good player, and there's no doubt about it. What he's doing at age 21 there in the major leagues in the middle of a pennant race is pretty exciting. Agree with your assessment as well that if Lombard is drifting free in any of your leagues, that you grab him because I think he might be a great volume play. Shifting to another article here, Dave, you have a Tim Stebbins article on Foster Griffin. Foster Griffin is a very, very fascinating guy when you really kind of take a deeper dive into him. And when you put this on the show, Doc, I did do a little bit of a dive on him. Really a good acquisition there for Cleveland. I was jealous when they did acquire him. I know Dave McDonald was very excited about adding Griffin to their rotation, even though the Guardians have sort of fallen on hard times here the last week or so. They're five games below 500. They lost 2 out of 3 to my beloved White Sox this past week, and they're still hovering, though. They're five games behind in the Central. Talk a little bit about what Stebbins said in that article about Griffin and a little bit about what you discovered about his pitch mix.
Yeah, so the article is called Vast Arsenal Defines Griffin's, quote, second chance in baseball. And it goes into talking about how he's a different pitcher now than he was in his first turn before he went away. Before, when he was with wandering through different teams, he had just a fastball, a curveball, a changeup, and a cutter. And now he's added a slider, a splitter, and he's added, like, he's got 7 different pitches, which is fantastic. But the biggest thing was that he wanted to stop chasing velo and look for different ways to get batters out. That's tremendous understanding of who he is, what he has. And what he said, quote, having a deep mix like that definitely helps me understand the pitching aspect of knowing you need to get a guy out more than one way, especially as a starter. Now, in this article, it's actually pretty interesting. There's a graphic there of how he attacks right-handed pitching and or batters and left-handed batters. And it's a nice graphic there of what's been going on. It talks about how his cutter has been his bread and butter all season long, but he's got a balanced mix between his four-seamer, his sweeper, his changeup, his sinker, and his curve, and his splitter. So of all those pitches that I mentioned, only the splitter is used under 10%. Right. The rest, it's just a wide variety of different pitches, different ways of attacking and confusing the batters. And it's pretty great. The one interesting thing that I did see was that he actually calls his own pitches in Washington and Cleveland. I didn't actually know that. But he just said he didn't have time with the pitch clock, you know, to say no to pitches or to get, he wanted to be comfortable within that small, short time frame. Now, he hasn't really changed his arsenal much since joining the Guardians. He did lower his, I think it was his cutter on his first game, but he actually threw more of it back on the second game. I really like what the Guardians did here. I was surprised that the Nationals gave up on him, but I know he is an older pitcher. So it was almost like found money and they kind of wanted to cash in.
Absolutely.
And,
right.
Yeah. And to quote Guardians fans, I don't know, maybe they have another Bob Feller here.
Well, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves here, David.
I'm kidding.
I do like Griffin. I do like this acquisition for the Guardians. I love these lefties that are those crafty lefties that know how to get guys out. You know, he does not use high velocity. I mean, his hardest pitch that he throws is really that four seam, and it's about 91 miles an hour. But when you're a lefty who can throw that cutter in on the hands of right-handed batters, you know, you're going to be ahead of the game a lot of the time. And to your point, he uses the cutter more against righties than he does against lefties. When you see really good starting pitchers like this that have multiple pitch mix, they do have a different way that they go about attacking right-handed hitters versus left-handed hitters. And I'm glad that you pointed that out, because a lot of people who don't pay as close attention as what you do miss that. They miss how guys are actually actively going around to attack hitters. And Griffin does that. He doesn't get a ton of strikeouts. You know, he's got a 22% strikeout average, but he also doesn't walk anybody. And when you don't put base runners on and you give up a couple of hits, that's okay, right? You walk somebody and then give up a couple of hits, it could lead to a big inning for you. So I like what Griffin is doing, and I think that that's a really solid pickup for the Guardians. Kudos to them for doing that. I do think that he could be a guy that moves up pitching ranks next year just based on what his consistency was like this year.
I think so too. And he's on a team that really knows how to develop pitching. So he's in a good place.
Well, here's one that's going to rankle Torres. Our third and final beat writer article that we have here by Jason Foster. It was about the Mets, and it was Francisco Lindor discussing his future with the Mets and discussing essentially the future of the entire team. Deep breath here. What did Lindor say in that article, Dave? And what do you think is the future of the Mets as well?
So the article is Francisco Lindor discusses future with the Mets. And he just wanted to promote that the team is actually pretty good. And that this first half of the season shouldn't really define, you know, who they are going forward and what they have to offer. To be honest, they've been actually one of the best teams in baseball since the trade deadline. Now, I know they're not playing for this year. I think they're too far back to actually make an impact this year, but you never know. However, since the day after the trade deadline, they're fourth in baseball with a .265 batting average. They're first in baseball with 19 home runs. They've got a 128 WRC plus, which is first, a 2.7 WAR, which is second in all of baseball. Now, the walks and the strikeouts, not as good as, you know, you'd want to see. But overall, they've actually been pretty good. And a lot of the players that he's promoting here, they're going to have on the team next year. They've got Bo Bichette, who could opt out.
No, stop.
Should be better. I'm just going by what Lindor is saying. Please,
you just do this to aggravate me. You know, he's not any good, Dave.
They also have, then you won't like this. Luis Robert, he's actually been pretty good.
The show's over, Dave. We're done. Thanks for joining, everybody. We're going to wrap it up here.
But he also talked about Marcus Semien.
Oh, God.
I don't know, though. I really don't know, because you look at their salaries for next year with all the options and everything. It's estimated that they're going to have a $318.2 million payroll. Here's the thing. Lindor should be better. Soto should be better. If everyone actually hits to the way that they should be hitting, they've got a solid team. And pitching-wise, since the deadline, they've also had some really good, like Sean Manaea's been good. Christian Scott's been good. Zach Thornton's been good. Kodai Senga might be their closer if Devin Williams doesn't come back. I don't know. What do you think? Tell me what you think.
They feel kind of like the island of misfit toys to me, you know? Like, Lindor obviously has not had a Lindor-like season. What I really like is that young pitching. And guys like McLean and Thornton and Scott can continue to grow together. Manaya has been a good Wiley veteran there. They do have some things there that could lead to them being back in it, but are they going to be good enough next year to compete with the Braves and with the Phillies and an improving Marlins team in a very, very tough NL East? We'll have to see. All of those teams are going to get better. They have a huge bloated payroll that they can't really make too many moves off of, it doesn't seem, at this point. So we will have to see. But guys like Lindor and Bichette have to be better. Luis Robert has to be healthy and be ready to play. Semien still looks like he can play second base. His offensive numbers are down a little bit, but he's a good volume play still in some leagues, depending on the depth of your league. So I guess we'll have to see what happens with the Mets.
I think the biggest word that you said there was payroll, because if we do, in fact, get a salary cap, then I don't think this team will be as good as Lindor's saying here, because they may have to shed some salary and do a little bit of rebuilding. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the salary cap would be. And I know there was a rumor of what it could be this week, but I can't remember what it was, but I think it was in the 200 millions or something like that. So if you're estimated to have 318 million and this is what you have with holes to fill, if you have to shed that salary, then chances are you'll be in a rebuild.
Yeah, because no one's going to give you what you think you should get for guys that you're just shedding payroll on. No. You're not going to get top prospects back when they know that you just have to get rid of somebody.
Yeah.
Makes total sense. That's going to be a really fun thing to watch this offseason. Not really, is the labor disagreement and whether or not they actually institute a salary cap and or a salary floor and what the negotiations for that will be. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. With that, we're going to take our first commercial break, and when we come back, Dave and I are getting back to basics. Okay, we're back. Dave, you are an injury expert who writes about injuries like 5 days a week, and I supposedly am a bullpen expert who writes about bullpens like 3 days a week.
Bullpen expert.
Supposedly. I don't know. This year, it doesn't look like I'm too much of an expert on anything at this point. other than walking through cobwebs and having syrup hands, apparently. Wanted to ask you some questions about some teams that are facing injury problems and sort of how they're addressing that. And if you have any updates on these guys that are hurt. The first question I had for you was about the Atlanta Braves and their rotation, where they've had Spencer Schwellenbach, Spencer Strider, Hurston Waldrop, and Ronaldo Lopez battling various level of injuries. What are you seeing there, and what's your advice for us on that?
Yeah, this situation has been one that's really hampered them all year long, and it's really unfortunate because their offense has been what's been holding them through or pushing them through this, and they just can't get healthy on the mound. So Schwellenbach is throwing bullpens right now, but he's not 100% healthy enough to progress to live BP. Mm. And it's unfortunate because he was supposed to be ready by now to at least be starting live BP, if not advancing to possibly a rehab assignment.
Right, right.
The vibe around the team right now is that he's likely not going to pitch in 2026 because the time is ticking. As for Spencer Strider and Hurston Waldrop, it's been a roller coaster because we've been hearing, you know, that they could be ready. No, they probably won't. Time will run out. But just recently, they both began throwing a throwing program soon. And it may have actually already happened by the time, you know, we're recording. There just hasn't been too much news on it. So they need to start throwing almost from scratch, I think, with long tossing, side sessions, bullpens, live bullpens, and a rehab assignment. There really isn't that much time left for fantasy relevance,
right?
Possibly for the playoffs. This might be like what the Red Sox are doing with Crochet. They just want to get these guys back for the playoffs. And then finally, Ronaldo Lopez, he threw a bullpen on Tuesday, and Mark Bowman, who writes about the Braves on MLB.com, he thinks he'll be back soon, and the team views him as a starter. So he's someone to possibly stash in leagues if you are really desperate for starting pitching. Although I kind of like AJ Smith-Shawver more.
Mm-hmm. I do too. I think Lopez, you know, I saw him here in Chicago for a long time before he got moved out. And I just worry about him with the octane. You know, he doesn't seem like he's going to go very deep into games, and he's not going to get you a lot of strikeouts. So the propensity for there to be violence in his box score really bothers me for adding him as a starting pitcher. As for Strider, boy, I'll tell you, I think, you know, you look at Strider and you see he's kind of been all over the map the last couple of seasons with injuries and different concerns in terms of what his game has looked like. But if you kind of take a deeper dive into some of the metrics, you know, if he cuts that walk rate back down to a normal level, he can still be a very effective starter in the major leagues, I think. Don't you?
I do, but I think it relies on his velocity, unfortunately. And mm-hmm. coming back from he had the internal brace. So coming back from that, if you can't alter the way that you pitch and change your mindset into I have to do something differently in order to succeed. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he did that or not, but I also know that the velocity wasn't there, which tends to happen too with these injuries. So either he didn't have enough time off or he didn't change, you know, the way he pitches, and he just couldn't get that velocity. Until he does all three of those things, I don't know how successful he's going to be.
He needs to throw something more to righties. You know, he focuses so much on the fastball and the slider. He needs another pitch to get right-handed hitters out, I think.
I think so. He needs something else in his arsenal, but he's such a smart guy, and listening to him talk and be so aware of his body and what he's doing, I think he's going to be okay if he can actually come around the ways that I was saying and actually understand what his body needs to do. I think he can do that.
He needs a change up.
Yeah.
I love change ups. Conversation for a different day. Okay, Dave, let's shift over. Next injury concern that we have is the Yankees outfield. Boy, they've been decimated. Aaron Judge, Cody Bellinger went down about 10 days ago. Giancarlo Stanton. What are you hearing there, and what do you think the prognosis is there for those three guys?
Yeah, well, the news here is actually pretty good. That first, Bellinger and Stanton, they've both been running the bases, which is good. Bellinger has been running at about 90%, and they think that he's going to start a rehab next week.
Oh, good.
He did admit that he does experience still tightness in his hamstrings. So I don't know how smart it is to start a rehab, but I'm not him, nor am I one of their doctors.
You're kidding, really? I didn't know that.
Who would have thought, right? I only play one on TV. Stanton, he is running the bases too. God, he's been out for so long, though. I don't know. Like, they expect him to be back this season. But this is a guy who couldn't even open a bag of chips in the offseason.
So oh, my God.
I don't know what to expect from him.
Yeah.
And then the third guy, Aaron Judge, they said he's somewhat behind those two. I don't know what somewhat means. It could be a week. It could be a month. Who knows? But he's still doing light exercises, and he did start playing catch. I wouldn't expect much from him fantasy-wise, but maybe come the playoffs. I don't know.
I have him in my weekly points league that I'm in, and I can keep him next year for $61. I think I'm going to let that ship sail or try to trade him in the next week and see if I can kind of restock the shelves a little bit for next year. Long story short, I really feel like MLB is becoming like the NHL. And that, you know, we hear about these injuries and there's no specifics. It's like, oh, he's got an upper body injury. Well, what does that mean? Like, what does somewhat behind mean? Can somebody qualify that for me? I don't get it.
I think a lot of managers just want to say words just to get out of giving an actual answer. I didn't lie. He is somewhat behind.
Yes, he is somewhat behind. I'm somewhat behind all the time. I've got tight hamstrings too, Cody Bellinger. Come on, man. I'm 53 years old. Let's go. Yeah. Okay. The next one that we wanted to talk about, the Dodgers catching situation has been kind of a crazy thing to watch the last few weeks. They've made a couple of acquisitions and got Hunter Fiducia and Ben Roethlisberger. But they're waiting on Will Smith to come back, and Dalton Rushing has an injury too. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, for Smith, I don't think he's anywhere close to returning. He's had so many setbacks. But he is throwing, he's lifting weights, and he should go under. He should have some BP at some point this week. Now, I know yesterday being Friday, both him and Dalton Rushing were taking swings in the batting cages. So I would assume that that was his actual batting practice. So like the step forward in his progress, unless they wanted it to be live BP. I don't know. But I do know he's going to need a lot more of that. And then from there, a rehab assignment. The Dodgers have been pretty good without him. Mind you, they have struggled a bit lately, but this is more of a playoff sort of thing for him.
Exactly. Yeah, they have to get him ready for the playoffs. There might not be a team in the playoffs that needs their catcher more than what the Dodgers need with Will Smith. I mean, he does so much that flies under the radar for that team that I think a lot of casual fans miss. You know, he is essentially the captain of the team. He bats cleanup on that team. You know, he's a guy that they rely on for a lot of different things, not just offensively, but also defensively. So this really does feel like a move to get healthy for the fall, and you hope that he is, because you talk about a guy who's got a lot of wear and tear and who's played a lot of baseball over the last 5 years. It's Will Smith. I mean, he's caught a ton of games. He's just an absolute warrior out there. I know we use that term a lot, but he really is.
As for Dalton Rushing, though, he's got a UCL tear in his right elbow, and they said there's a very small chance for him to play catcher this year. I wouldn't expect him to play at all, simply because he needs to start a throwing program. And he can't play anywhere else in the field, and he can't even play on as the DH because of Tommy's there.
Yeah, they don't really have a spot for him, and I'm not a big fan. So, you know, either in fantasy or in real life. So I don't really care what happens to Dalton Rushing, just to be honest. Okay, it's like a never-ending hit list here on me. So now we're going to shift from the Dodgers to the Pittsburgh Pirates and my favorite all-time fantasy player, O'Neill Cruz. They have some pretty serious injuries here on their team as well, don't they, with Cruz and Griffin and Endy and Ryan O'Hearn all kind of coming back in various stages from a variety of different ailments.
Yeah, so this is a team that if they could somehow get healthy in the near future, I think they could make a run. And it's unfortunate because it's been years of suffering, and now they finally get all the players that they really need to win, and they just can't get them on the field at the same time. So O'Neill Cruz, he's struggling right now in his rehab, and he's striking out a lot. And I know
Wait, what?
I know that's
what do you mean?
And others.
O'Neill Cruz is striking out?
Yeah, I it's unbelievable.
Let me ask you a follow-up question to that. Can he hit lefties yet?
I don't know. I don't know what he's done down there, but it's very surprising. I get that. They said he won't be activated this weekend, but he should be soon. So we'll see what happens there. Connor Griffin, he's supposed to have a checkup in the coming days. So once we know what the results of that checkup is, how he's doing, if he can take some steps forward, we'll know how he is. He's eligible to come off the IL on September 4th. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I don't know. We'll find out. Once we find out the results of this checkup, we'll know where he can go from there. Endy Rodriguez, such a sad story because he's such a good player, but he's always hurt.
Can't stay healthy.
Yeah. So I wouldn't expect too much from him, even when he does come back at some point, because I think he's just going to get injured again. And then the outsider here, Ryan O'Hearn, there haven't been any updates yet, but he was originally scheduled to miss 6 to 8 weeks, and that was as of the beginning of August. Mm-hmm. So there's a chance if he's either on schedule or even slightly ahead to put in 2 to 3 weeks. He did come back early from his last injury earlier this year, so there's a chance he might do it here.
I feel really bad for O'Hearn because I feel like he was finally getting an opportunity to show people what he could do with every day at bats, and then he got hurt. I do like this Pirates team quite a bit, and as much as I ballyhoo on O'Neill Cruz, he's a heck of a player. I mean, the guy has just got an incredible skill set, and he looked like he was really kind of starting to coalesce a little bit more this year. You know, things were really coming together there. It'll force me to really reconsider him in those long winter nights in Chicagoland and see where he comes up in drafts in the springtime.
Yeah.
Okay, last one here, Dave. And please, please, please give me good news on both of these guys. The Padres rotation. Padres had an interesting trade deadline, I felt like. But we're waiting on information and performance from Joe Musgrove, who's yet to throw a major league pitch this year, and Nick Pivetta as well. What are you hearing on those guys? And please make it be good news for me.
Would you take one out of two good news?
Okay, I'll go with it.
Musgrove, he's up to 39 pitches. He himself said he feels better than he's felt in the last couple of years. Mind you, a lot of players say they feel great, so you never know. But he's looked good, he feels good, and he's going to need a couple more rehab starts before he comes back. He could come back by September, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And that would give you three or four starts in the month to really give you some fantasy impact.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Pivetta, he had some setbacks. The biggest one was recently on his rehab, where early on he just threw a pitch and walked off the mound. He was done. He knew something was aggravated. But he did throw a bullpen shortly after that and actually threw a lot of pitches in that bullpen. So I'm not saying it's unlikely that he'll return, but I would put him a little farther back than Musgrove when it comes to timelines, simply because of the setback.
Yeah, I had the misfortune of rostering Musgrove during Tout Wars draft, and you have unlimited IL there, so I've held on to him, but I was really hoping that he would have been back earlier in the season, second half, based on everything that had happened there. That just hasn't happened. My Tout Wars pitching staff has been an absolute unmitigated, unprecedented, probably in Tout Wars disaster. So anything I could get out of him would be great and helpful. Let's take another commercial break here, Dave, real quick, and then we'll come back and I'll talk a little bit about some bullpens and get your take on those things as well. Okay, we're back. Bullpens. What to say about bullpens? The Achilles heel of many fantasy players, I feel. Something that people would rather, you know, have their prostate examined or have a colonoscopy done than talk about bullpens this year. But we're going to talk about it anyway, folks. We're going to get into it a little bit. I wanted to talk a little bit about just the current state of them and a couple of comments that I have on others. This is really starting to drive people crazy. By my count this afternoon, we have about 8 to 10 different committees in MLB right now, depending on what you consider a committee. Again, I guess that's a subjective type of term there. And there's 4 or 5 teams on top of those that have really shaky closer situations to begin with. And so we're looking at almost half of the major league teams that have some turmoil at the back end of their bullpen in terms of who's going to get those next save situations. I wonder, Dave, just kind of as a leadoff question to you before I talk about a couple of these bullpens that are in turmoil or in flux, do you think that people's strategy for drafts next year could change based on what we're seeing this year? When I say that, what I mean is leagues where I actively targeted a middle-tier guy and then a couple of specs picks are leagues where I've generally done fairly well. However, in some of my higher leagues that I'm in, the more higher profile, I guess you could say, leagues that I've been in, I really went all in early on and tried to pay up for a stud closer. I got Mason Miller in one league. I have Joan Duran in my Tout league, who's been, you know, just been great when he's been available to pitch. And he hasn't had a lot of opportunities here over the last week or any, I should say. Mm-hmm. Do you think that people are going to change their mind about what they do? A lot of people the last couple of years, it has felt to me, are doing the, I'm going to try to draft one person and then I'm going to do some specs at the end of a draft, like guys that I think could get save opportunities. What do you think the impact will be on strategy for next year? I know it's kind of early to say, but what will your strategy be, I guess?
That's a loaded question for many reasons. But the first reason, I think it depends, first of all, on the fantasy player himself. So, or herself, sorry. If you know your strength is fab, then I suggest waiting on saves because I think you'll be able to properly bid on somebody and pick up someone later. But if you're not strong in fab, like myself, I tend to actually bid up on closers in my draft simply because I find it easier to roster streaming pitchers and find those hitters later in the season that I can bid on. But I'm not really that great at fab. So if mm-hmm. I'm bidding on what everyone else is bidding, I'm probably going to lose out. So I like to have that stability and then hope that what I've actually bid or what I've actually drafted can actually be something that I can use throughout the entire season. That being said, I wonder if we should actually stop looking at closers the way that we do, in the sense that they have that role and the managers, you know, want them in that role and they don't have anyone else behind. I know before we spoke today, I was talking about how pitchers can be thought of as like a car and they mm-hmm. all have certain mileage on them. Well, a starter's mileage before it needs to go to the gas station or the shop, it has a lot more than a reliever. And once that reliever runs out of mileage, it needs to go to the shop or the IL. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if, like, Cade Smith, for instance, he's one of the best in baseball, but he's been used so much over the last few years. Do you think maybe his mileage is going to be up and it's just going to be the next one? Like, is this someone that next year we're going to have to look at and say, why didn't I see this coming? Oh my God, he's on the IL. Mm-hmm. Now my third round pick is gone for the season. I don't know. I'm only thinking out loud here and speculating, but I wonder if we should just look at, you know, what the pitcher can do, the stuff that he has. And then if there's an opportunity, maybe that's how we try and build bullpens, as opposed to going for the high profile guy who has done it for a few years, but his body may just burn out and run out.
It's so hard to say because luck plays such a factor in so many of these things too, right? I mean, you can look at a bullpen till you're blue in the face and try to play along with the manager and figure out who's going to be the closer. And then the manager has a change of heart and feels like, well, I'm going to use this guy in the seventh inning to be able to get a couple of key outs, and then I'll just figure out the back end later. So these roles that are so fluid make it hard for fantasy players to roster these guys, unless you know for sure it's like a sure deal, like we talked about, like a Cade Smith or an Aroldis Chapman. Like, you know what you're getting. You know that those guys are going to close. It's pretty simple. Yeah. But I wonder if one of the things that we need to think about in fantasy baseball is changing that statistic in general and making it saves plus holds or doing something of that nature so that you can have more flexibility in building your roster and not spend a super high draft pick. I feel like it's I don't ever like that. I'll be in Glarf or whatever, and then I spend a third-round pick on Cade Smith, and I'm like, I just feel dirty after I do it. Like, I don't like it. There's so many other guys that I would rather take there, and then I just do it because I'm like, I got to get 35 saves there, and I think he's the best bet to do that. Some years it works out. Some years it doesn't. I'm good, I think, at speculating on other guys down the road. And so if I get a guy that I know is pretty solid, I feel pretty comfortable that I can build back in around that. You know, Tout Wars was a good example of that this year. I took Jacob Lotz in the reserve round, not knowing what his role would be, but knowing that I liked his stuff and I liked the way that he went about his business. Now, I didn't have a crystal ball to know that he'd have 20-plus saves at this point of the year, but pairing him with Duran and then adding a Grant Taylor in to help with ratio control really helps a bullpen there, you know, if you're able to do things like that. Now, that's a good example of being lucky, but there's also some skill involved in that and being able to identify those underlying guys that could end up having expanded roles, especially in the season second half when you really need to fall into some extra saves.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, too, that saves is just it's just one category. It's the only – and it's – you pick a reliever for one category, and it's the only – position in all of baseball where you're playing for just one of the 10 standard categories.
Right. Right. Yeah. So I hope that's something that we will address. And I know that when we were in Arizona for First Pitch that Rick Graham and I will be talking about that leading off the series there. For those of you who've never been to First Pitch Arizona in November, boy, let me tell you, that is a great weekend of talking nonstop baseball, seeing baseball, fantasy baseball, lots of great people that are down there. If you're ever considering going, I know it's an expense for many people, but boy, is it really something to get involved in. It's a great time down there. And you could come and see my fat head speak on Thursday, which will be great. A couple of bullpens I wanted to talk about, Dave. Of course, I can't go too far without talking about my beloved White Sox. You know, Grant Taylor should be the closer there. Is he really the closer? I can't really tell you anymore. He blew a save on Tuesday in the Cincinnati series. It was pretty nasty. He's got six saves and leads the team, but it looks like they're kind of a committee, even though if you go on Roster Resource, Grant Taylor will be listed as the closer. But the actual usage pattern is that they tend to use him for two innings at a time, and then he doesn't pitch for 3 or 4 days, which drives me absolutely bonkers as a fan. When you know that he's the best weapon you have in the bullpen, then he's not being used. The Sox do have some interesting guys, though, that they've added to that bullpen. Trevor Richards has been a really good find for them in middle relief. And Oscar Brazoban, who they got at the trade deadline, and Jordan Hicks looks absolutely resurgent with them. He's got command back. He's got a couple extra ticks on his fastball. I do think Taylor is probably the best bet to get saves there down the stretch, but who knows what that's going to end up looking like. It's amazing to me that you could have a first-place team and a bullpen that's in this much disarray. It just speaks to the weakness of the American League Central. Going to the north side of town, one thing that I would like for fantasy players to consider is that there's a lot of talk around the return of Daniel Palencia. But what I would like to point out to people is that Jacob Webb has actually been lights out for the Cubs in that closer role. Craig Counsell said something very interesting last week, Dave, in that he did not guarantee that Palencia would return to that closer role. He was asked by a beat reporter if Palencia, when he returns, was going to come right back to that role. And he hedged a little bit. And I can understand why. Webb has 9 saves in the interlude, picking up for Palencia, a 2.33 ERA, a 27.4 strikeout percentage, and he's limited his walks to 7%. He's done a really nice job for them in that spot. If you remember back to last year's playoffs, Palencia was being used as the first guy out of the bullpen a lot of time, as a stopper, as a guy that would come in and get an inning or two and then cede to the next guy that was coming. So I don't know that they actually view Palencia as – they're a closer. It could end up being a mix and match situation too with Palencia and Ryan Zephyrjohn, who they got at the trade deadline as well. But the saves guy right now has been Webb, and I wonder if that will continue. So for those of you that have Webb, even with Palencia coming back, I would advise you to wait a week or two and see how this all really shakes out before you decide to start getting rid of Webb and adding Palencia or going in a different direction. Another bullpen that has become fun to watch. I don't know if you would agree with me, Dave, and think that it's fun, but Colorado has stumbled back around onto Jordan Romano. And when he came up after they had, you know, kind of refurbished him, everybody kind of laughed. Well, it looks kind of like Romano is going to need to laugh right now, doesn't it? He's actually been pretty good.
That McDonald.
That's the second time we brought up Dave here, but Romano actually looks like he's pretty comfortable pitching in Colorado so far. You know, the post All-Star break, he's been in 8 games. He's got 9 strikeouts, 6 saves in those games. It looks like his command is back. Now, it's a slippery slope pitching in Colorado, and we also know that it's a slippery slope for a guy like Romano, who tends to give up walks in bunches and then a big hit. He does not give up a lot of homers, though. You know, he's only given up 1 home run all year, despite his high ERA. But it's coming down. I don't know if you've been looking at that at all, Dave, or paying attention at all to what he's doing or how he's getting things done. But, man, oh, man, he's been really good in limiting barrels, and the strikeout percentage is up above 27%. Do you have any interest in adding Romano anywhere?
I mean, to be fair, it's a Colorado pitcher. I don't remember any Colorado pitcher I've ever rostered. That being said, if Romano is healthy, which he hasn't been for the last few years, he's going to be at least an average pitcher. And if he can be Colorado's best reliever, like I think he is right now, I think he is going to be relevant. And I mean, the team just wants to see what they have for the rest of the season. If they have something here in Romano, then I think they're going to let it go. Like, they're just going to let him go and see what he can do.
I think it's a great story. I always root for these guys who have the injuries and then the ineffectiveness and can't find it. And when they do find it again, I think it's a great story, you know? So I'm pulling for Romano. I don't currently roster him anywhere, folks, because I'm afraid of the 8-run explosion in the 9th inning that, you know, is maybe coming at some point, but he's been really effective the last couple of weeks there. I wanted to talk about both LA teams, Dave. You know, the Dodgers were speculating this past week. Edwin Diaz has been a disaster. His ERA, I joked about it this past week in an article that I wrote at Rotoballer. His ERA is as high as my batting practice ERA at Batavia High School throwing BP. It's not been good. He's got a 10.66 ERA. Now, that being said, Diaz did bounce back last night and get a save. He was set up by Tanner Scott. Roster Resource is currently listing this as a co-closer situation. And I could definitely see Dave Roberts mixing and matching, because we know of all the managers in baseball, Dave Roberts will say one thing and do something completely different when the game is on the line. Are you in any situations where you're rostering one or both of those guys?
Personally, I'm not, but I would not get rid of Edwin Diaz by any means. I wouldn't get rid of Tanner Scott by any means. Sorry. I know that Diaz hasn't looked great at all. The velocity is still working its way back up. And it's still a tick or two below from where it was when he was at his most dominant. And coming back from a major surgery, it does take a while, especially as a reliever, to really get going. I mean, you know, for a starting pitcher with that kind of injury, you know, a couple starts could be fine, but Diaz has to work through multiple innings, which could be multiple starts and relief appearances, and it's going to take a while. So I would keep Tanner Scott because I think he's going to get some opportunities. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the Dodgers right now, they're, like we've said multiple times, they're working towards the playoffs, and they're just going to use as a closer who works best by the time the playoffs start.
Exactly. And I think that they will, again, they'll fill in the back end of that bullpen. They will be successful with whatever they do. I agree with you about what you said about Scott, though. I could see Scott vulturing 3 to 5 saves the rest of the way. Diaz has had a propensity in his career, if you kind of take a look at it and take a step back and be objective, every time he's been injured, it has taken him a while to really ramp up and feel comfortable again. And I think that that's no exception this year. So it'll be kind of fun to watch down the stretch there to see what they do. I also want to shift over to the Angels, because I feel like they're doing something that's kind of interesting right now. You know, Ben Joyce has long been supposedly the closer in waiting there, and he's a great weapon. There's no doubt about it. He did get a save on Wednesday, but they have another guy there named Sammy Natera Jr., who's a lefty, who is just absolutely blowing people away without a very high velocity fastball. He's got a 40% strikeout rate because he's just got great command and really can put the ball where he wants. They look like they might have something going on there at the back end of their bullpen now, after struggling all year with Zephyr Hahn and Bachman and Yates. Zephyr Hahn and Yates were both traded at the deadline, which has opened up some opportunities there in that Angels bullpen. I'm watching that one really carefully. I've been writing about both of those guys over the last couple of weeks. I think they're going to trade chances the rest of the way, and they're going to try to see where those guys fit in and what roles they fit best in. Despite Joyce's strikeout stuff, I'm not totally sold that he's a closer, and we'll revisit that at another point, I'm sure, this winter and look at it. Yeah, his injury history really kind of precludes him from being able to be in any one role for a long period of time, unfortunately. Yeah. The last one that I really wanted to talk about, and Dave, I'm really interested to hear your take on this one. You and I had talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know if you recall it. I recall it just because I thought it was a flaky comment that I made, and I like to get your goat and make you laugh a little bit because at my stupidity. But did the Mets have a closer with Kodai Senga? I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at him, and I'm going, wait a minute. This could actually really work, couldn't it? If he was able to take his six-pitch mix and narrow it down to two or three really strong pitches with that ghost forkball as an out pitch, and he could really go after it for one inning, this could work, couldn't it?
I think it could. I think a lot of times you see starters who just they can't go through, you know, 6-7 innings. But when they're there for one inning, they can put their best, not just their best foot forward, their best whole everything forward. And you can get the best pitches, you know, added velocity, maybe more spin. And then they'll have the rest of the night and the next day to rest. And then he's been outstanding as the reliever. I was hoping you would give me the answer as to whether or not I should pick him up. Like, I actually see him in one of my leagues where he's looking pretty good and he's just sitting there. But a lot of times, though, it's you have this this vision of what this guy used to be, but when he moves to a different role, I think that's where we have to actually wipe the slate almost clean and just remember that this is a whole new role for him where he can actually show more, be more, and do more in a smaller sample. And maybe we can give him a shot here to see if he actually can be the closer. That being said, is Devin Williams is still under contract for next year. Am I right?
Correct. Yes, he is.
So I don't know how long term this would work for the Mets. But, I mean, to shed some salary like we were talking about, this could be a nice offseason trade going somewhere. And you could trade him as a closer to another team.
I haven't even really thought about last year. I was thinking more about this year and how this might profile for him. If you're in a league where you have SP and RP slots and he slots in as a relief pitcher that you can put into an SP slot, like in my home league, I'm intrigued in adding him there because if he's going to add saves, those are things that I really need to get. Now, the problem that you always have with Senga is the ratio volatility, you know, where he has a tendency to give up a lot of walks. But to your point, in August here, he's pitched in four games. He's gone four innings total, got a couple of saves in those. He struck out five guys in that, and he's only walked two. Since the All-Star break, he's looked like a little bit of a different guy. And I wonder if it's just, you know, being able to let loose on the pitch mix a little bit. You know, Senga is a guy that has always tinkered quite a bit. And I wonder if he can get by. I just wonder if he can get by with the four seamer and the cutter and the forkball becomes kind of his out pitch again. You know, he can kind of shed the sweeper and the slider, which have led him into trouble in dark places the last couple of years. I wonder if this could actually work in the short term. I don't know if it'll work long term. We'll have to see how that works out. But I am very, very interested in watching to see what Senga does over the next week or two. And I might add him in a couple of leagues before it's too late because he looks like he's going to get some opportunities. The one thing I'll say about that is that I do feel that Williams is not going to be on the IL very long. And so Senga might find himself in a middle relief role there or a high leverage role and not be getting saves here in a couple of weeks. But for now, could be a cool pickup for you. Mm-hmm. Okay, Dave, we'll take a quick break and we'll come back and finish up with our mental health moment. All right, Dave. So you're not quite heading back to school yet, but I am. And we've been talking a lot offline and in the show over the last few weeks about how important physical health is for people, especially for men as we age. I made some changes this summer to try to be adding more steps into my day, walking, doing some other activities as well. And I know that you always are, you know, riding your bike, you know, every other day, every third day or whatever, getting these long bike rides in, being active. I know that you like the pool and the sauna as well. You go for walks. I wanted to ask you while we're kind of thinking about this, you know, summer is a time where we're a little bit less busy with work. And now that things are getting busy again, you know, working those 40 plus hour weeks in school, like you and I both are, what are you going to do to maintain that physical wellness?
I think it's important for just not even just for us, but anyone else who works, you know, 40 hours a week, I think it's important to make health and physical fitness a part of your life. And it can be hard at first, especially if you're brand new to it, because A, it can be difficult to, you know, start moving your body and walking around when you haven't been doing it. But B, it as hard as it is, I think after, you know, a few weeks, we're creatures of habit, and I think after a while, your body will get used to it. You just have to commit to it and to make it a priority that no matter what happens throughout the day, you give yourself that time to yourself. It will help your physical needs. It will help your mental needs, and it will help you be a better person overall throughout your life. Like there are days where if I don't get out and either walk or if I don't get to the gym, like I used, like I love going in the mornings. And if I don't get there throughout the day, my mind is off because A, I'm out of my habit. And B, I don't have that relief knowing that I gave myself that time. So I think what's very important for anyone listening who's looking to try and be more active, it's just you really have to prioritize it. And as much as it sounds like, you know, oh, Dave gives himself 2 hours here and an hour here. He's going to a sauna and a steam. No. But I'm also at home, you know, working on, you know, my writing. I'm also at home, you know, helping with the family, spending time with the family. It's just, you've got to prioritize it in the sense that you've got to put it into your schedule, mm-hmm. make it a part of your life. And once you get used to it, it'll become such a, like a natural transition for you that every day, okay, I've got to do this. I can fit in some time at the gym here, or I can go later in the day and do this. Make it a priority, make it a part of your life. And I promise you, you will feel better from head to toe.
If you're like a lot of people out there, I think when you hit middle age, the thought process is, you know, you start your day early, you get through it, and then you go home and you sort of crash out, right? Like when I say crash out, it's not like the young people say crash out, you know, I mean, sitting in a chair, maybe having a beverage, watching some Netflix, watching a ball game, whatever it might be. I think if you're able to maybe combine some of these things, for those of you that are pressed for time, really, I like to try to combine things on some days where, you know, I try to start my day every day with some mindfulness, not only about what my day looks like, but how I'm acting, what I'm putting out into the universe. But like when I take my walks and whatnot, I might be listening to a podcast while I'm doing that, or I'm going to make a phone call to my mom or my dad or whatever while I'm doing that, just to, you know, as they say, proverbially kill two birds with one stone. I'm getting back into the season of my life where I work 6 days a week here. Starting tomorrow, I'll be back tutoring as well on Sundays. And I don't have a lot of time, but I also perform better generally when I don't have a lot of time. If I have too much downtime, I have a tendency to get lazy and fall into those bad habits again. So what I'm really trying to actively do is pursue drinking water. I bought myself a large like Yeti type mug for my desk at work to make sure that I'm filling that up in the morning and then again mid-morning and then in the afternoon again and making sure that I'm taking in enough water. And I've really cut down my coffee, which I know comes surprising since we're talking about Breakfast with the Beats and this is almost always a coffee talk podcast. But shifting and putting my coffee into a Yeti as well causes me to drink it slower because it stays hotter longer. So I don't pound as much coffee as what I was doing. So if I can have 2 cups of coffee a day, that should be plenty. And then really kind of trying to maintain those other gains that I've made so I can keep the weight off. I lost about 8 pounds this summer. And while that doesn't seem like it's a lot, you know, as some people would say, when you're fat like me, it's like throwing a deck chair off the Titanic. It doesn't really matter all that much. But I do feel a little bit different. I do feel like I'm a little bit more vibrant. And with my rheumatoid arthritis and Sjogren syndrome that I have, I really got to stay active to make sure that I don't fall into continued disrepair. And so I really want to make sure that I continue those gains. And I'm going to try to work hard to make sure that I'm doing that. I say that, and by next week, I'll probably be like, Dave, I'm just laying down now. but, you know, you got to make time for that, too. And the other thing that I would say to that, too, to maintain health, I'm really done doom scrolling. I'm not on Twitter or social media as much as I once was. I really don't want to know about the political world around me and a lot of the other things that are going on. And it's not that I don't care about it. It's just better for my mental health and for my ability to be engaged with my family when I'm not like doom scrolling all day and all night. So just a couple of tips there. Dave, anything else for the good of the order? I know we usually like to try to finish with a quote every week. Got any good quotes this week?
I got one by Yogi Berra. It's just
Yogi.
Baseball is 90% mental and the other half is physical.
Good old Yogi. He's got a bunch of great ones. My favorite one of his was the going to the pizza parlor with a bunch of the other Yankees, Phil Rizzuto and those guys back in the day. And the waitress asking him how he wanted his pizza cut, if he wanted it cut into 8 slices or 4. And he goes, you better make it 4. I can't eat 8. God bless Yogi. He was a national treasure. But with that, Dave, from rainy Chicago this Saturday morning with our coffee, we'll call it a day there. For those of you listening, thank you again for listening. If you like what you're hearing, please download. Please give us a like wherever you gather your podcasts at. We appreciate the fact that so many of you are sticking with us, even as fantasy football season is approaching for many people. With that, for Dave Funnel, I'm Mike Carter signing off for Breakfast with the Beats, episode 19. We'll be back next week. We are going to record a little early next week, guys. Dave and I both have things to do next weekend, family stuff to do, and we're going to record on Thursday night, but we will be back next weekend with episode 20, if you can believe it. And we will see you then. Take care of yourself and peace.